This is Emergency Medicine Match Advice, sponsored by Academic Life and Emergency Medicine, a podcast series designed to help medical students and residents strategically navigate the process of applying for residency in emergency medicine or to EM-sponsored fellowship programs. I'm your host, Mike Gisanti from Stanford University. Let's get started. Welcome to Emergency Medicine Match Advice, a Google Hangout web series sponsored by the website Academic Life and Emergency Medicine and its editor-in-chief, a medical educator extraordinaire, Dr. Michelle Lin from the University of California, San Francisco. Hi, Michelle.
Hey, thanks for hosting this. This has really started to be a popular series, and I'm looking forward to what this star panel has to come up with today.
It's indeed a star panel. I'm very excited for all of our discussants to be with us. Today, we're going to have sort of a special topic. It's called Interview Season Strategy Session. We're going to strategize. And to help us strategize, we have three expert program directors with us. Dr. Chrissy Babcock from the University of Chicago, Dr. Linda Regan from Johns Hopkins University, and Dr. Philip Shane from Emory University. The title of today's discussion is Interview Season Strategy Session. We're going to get into the nuts and bolts of the interview process. These are the topics that the students consider for weeks to months from the time that they hit submit on the ARIS application until they're foot to pavement, out on the trail, interviewing at programs. And on the Academic Life website, we've included a reference section for this installment. There's a number of articles. I'm not going to take the time to go through them all because I think our discussion is going to hit a lot of these topics and be very rich. But I do want to just highlight what articles we have online for you. There's one entitled, Does Interview Date Affect Match List Position in Emergency Medicine National Residency Program Match? So when do you interview in the season and does that affect your list or your program's ranking of you? Early Invitations for Residency Interviews. You can get early invitations. What are those? Are they the exception or the norm? We'll talk about that. How prevalent are potentially illegal questions during residency interviews? There are illegal or inappropriate questions that you might be asking. How do you handle them and how do you anticipate those? And then something called the Multiple Mini Interview for Emergency Medicine Resident Selection. There's another Google Hangout on the Academic Life website recently taped this summer on the MMI, the Multiple Mini Interview, but we've included an article for the students to read just so that they know that the MMI exists and that they're able to handle those questions when they encounter them in the trail. And then the last document is a summary document entitled The Residency Interview. It's a handout written by my predecessor from Northwestern, Jamie Collins, who's program director before I was. It's a very comprehensive document that covers all sorts of topics from what to wear on the trail to how to schedule your interviews, and will really serve as a nice summary piece of literature for our discussion today. So let's get right into our strategy session with the program directors. And we're going to start with Dr. Chrissy Babcock from University of Chicago. And Chrissy, what I'd like to know from you first is your opinion on the number of interviews that are enough. And then how do you advise your students at University of Chicago to create their interview season schedule?
Okay, thanks, Mike. Thanks, Michelle, for inviting us to be part of this panel. Yeah, I think that's a great question. In general, I think it depends a little bit on how competitive of an applicant you are. I would say if you're an AOA applicant, unbelievably competitive, interviewing at 10 programs is plenty, and upwards to 20 if you're couples matching or perhaps not the most competitive. We usually advise our students to do 10 to 15 interviews in the course of the interview season. And when it comes to the interview season and how to schedule, as many students will realize, interviews come in at different times. Different programs look at applications on a different timeline. So we usually recommend our students that as soon as you get an interview at a program that you're interested in, is to lock that down, schedule the interview on the date that works best for you, and lock yourself in. As more interviews come in, you can move your schedule around a little bit, but we recommend, especially if it's a program you're very interested in, to get in as quickly as possible to get your interview date scheduled.
So the interview season lasts from October at some programs all the way to February in others. What considerations do you have for recommending when to interview during the season? What months are perhaps the most strategic, if you will? Is it best to interview in October at the beginning of the season, in the middle of the season? What are your thoughts?
So I can tell you from historically from our program, we have matched students from every single interview day that we've interviewed at. So for us, it doesn't matter as much. I will say, though, if there is an art to interviewing, and so if it's your first, you know, you may not want to interview at your top program, your very first interview. So if you have programs that you think are going to be the ones that you really want to be strongly considered for, or you think pre-interview season that those are maybe the location of the country you want to go, I would put them in the middle. But I would keep your eyes open and your mind open because you never know when you're going to walk into an interview that you didn't maybe think was going to be the best and it's the perfect fit for you.
So students, if you think that you obsess about this process, obviously Dr. Babcock analyzes every single interview day and how many folks match more programming each day, and I do too, so I can agree with Chrissy's comment there. So how do the interviews actually get offered? So the students are applying through ARIS. How do they receive the offer to interview? Does it come through ARIS? What way does it get sent?
So different programs use different strategies. We, and I know you guys as well, Mike, use Interview Broker. That's a program where the students, if they're selected to interview, will receive an email from Interview Broker, and the students are allowed to sort of self-schedule. So they can schedule what date works best for them until that date is full. Not every program uses that. There's similar program or similar interview scheduling programs that are not called Interview Broker that work function the same way. Other programs use email, where you'll receive an email from the program coordinator. You'll correspond with that coordinator to schedule your interview, and some also use phone calls. My advice to any student would be is stay on top of your email, because that's how you will be notified, and schedule your interview as quickly as you can, realizing that if you don't get your first date, it's okay. Things tend to open up as the season goes on.
Yeah, absolutely. The students on rotation have their cell phones with email on the ready and are constantly hitting refresh throughout the day, sometime between October 1st and whenever they get their season locked down. And it's certainly fun to watch, but at the same time, you recognize just how stressful it is that you're constantly looking at your email. But that really is the best way to monitor for these offers. I do want to point out Interview Broker is a proprietary website that, you know, no connections to academic life or any of the panelists today, but I do use it as well. I think it's great, but it creates the interview schedule quickly, if you will. It offers interviews however the program decides to release them, and then the students can respond right away. There's no interface with the program coordinator, so it gets done very quickly. So it speaks to this issue of being on the ready, if you will, with your email at all times and really scheduling quickly, because the interview spots will go.
Right. And then on that note, Mike, because not everybody uses the same program, I would recommend that students check their spam filters and things as well, because sometimes some of these other programs may go to a spam filter right away. So just stay on top of that so that you aren't missing the interview if it comes in.
Now, how about travel? How do you advise your students regarding traveling around the country? Can you really group interviews, if you will? So you sort of have a Northern California week and a Southern California week and a week in New York City and a week in the Southeast. How do you advise students?
So in an ideal, perfect world, you would be able to schedule geographically. However, that isn't the reality of what really happens. Get your interviews at different times. You're doing the best to try to strategize and put things together. I would expect to not be able to hit all of your Midwest programs in 1 week or all of your East Coast programs in 1 week. You may have to fly back and forth, which is unfortunate and expensive. I think programs are trying to, especially a lot of programs in the same city, be flexible and trying to coordinate with the other programs within the cities, but unfortunately sometimes it isn't possible. So I tell our students, schedule the interviews for the best that you can, try to coordinate things the best that you can, but the most important thing is that you're actually visiting the locations that you're interested in training.
Not to highlight the city that we're from, but weather can play a part in creating your travel schedule. What considerations should folks have around parts of the country and the expectation that they can actually make all of their flights?
Yeah, so I would expect to not make all of your flights. Unfortunately, we interview in the winter season, which no matter where you are in the United States can be rough, including Atlanta, right, Phil? Last winter. So it can be tough, and you should anticipate that you may not have the perfect travel itinerary and or schedule. I would build extra time into your itineraries if you can. And, you know, I know we'll talk about this later, but worst case scenario, if you get stuck somewhere, it happens. Everybody understands that, and just make sure that you're letting programs know that ahead of time. If there's a snowstorm in Chicago, we fully expect to have a lot of people that have a hard time making it to the interviews, and that's part of the season.
Yeah, you know, I'd never heard the term polar vortex till last year, so I assume we're not going to have any this year.
Keep your fingers crossed, Mike. Keep your fingers crossed.
It shouldn't be an issue. Each of these interview days now tend to have a corresponding evening social event, often on the day of the interview itself or the night before. That impacts travel schedules too, I would assume.
Mm-hmm. Would you like me to comment on that? So I think the social events in general are actually quite important. I think it's a great opportunity for applicants to really get to know kind of the culture and the feel of the program. There'll often be a lot of residents there, maybe less faculty, maybe no faculty. And so it's a really good chance to kind of feel out the programs, because one of the most important things is if you feel that you're going to fit with these group of people to train with for the next 3 to 4 years. In addition, it also highlights the city. So if it's a city you haven't ever been to, it's kind of a nice way to learn about a city that you may decide to choose to live in. I would encourage people to attend these. At the same time, if you absolutely cannot because of your travel schedule or you're trying to make it to your next interview or you get delayed, that's okay. But again, I think it's the social events are really for the applicant's benefit, not so much for the program's benefit. And so if you can make it, it's great.
Can I interject for a little bit, which is the interview day, in my mind, is two-purposed, right? One is so the applicant gets to know the program, program gets to know the applicant, and just don't be lulled into complacency with that pre-day, right? It's not all about you because you are still being judged. So, you know, try not to get sloshed, just speaking from personal anecdotes that I've heard about. So just be careful, be on good behavior.
Yes, I think
your thoughts from, yeah, there you go, Linda. I was going to throw it to the panel just to get your thoughts on these evening socials. These are they're often billed as optional, and I don't know that they serve too much of a purpose for the program. They really are for the applicants, but perhaps in terms of its import, it's really not optional. The students really get so much out of it.
I completely agree. I think it's mostly for the actual applicant, but I do think Michelle's cautionary words are very important, that if the residents tell me they had to carry the applicant home, that's a red flag for me. And there's not that much you could do, I think, to really raise a red flag at the social dinner. But if you get to the point that there is a red flag, that's definitely going to get back to the program leadership.
Cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, I disagree a little bit. We've done the social for 15 years. I get a lot of feedback from my residents based on feel, fit. It's really a good opportunity for us to interview the candidates in an informal setting. So we use it pretty seriously. To me, the most important thing for an applicant is really the values of the residents and how long they get along with them. And so it's by far the best opportunity for the residents to understand the mission and the values of the program. I personally can't emphasize that social enough.
You know, these are held in a variety of ways. Sometimes they're at a restaurant, someone was saying they're the sort of social dinner out. Our program actually uses faculty homes and faculty attend, but I think most programs really are just sort of sending the residents out to spend time with the applicants alone. How do you guys set yours up? I'm just sort of curious what those students can expect. Is there food at each of yours? Is there alcohol at each of yours? What is the manner in which you should dress? So, you know, all those sorts of things.
So we give our residents a budget, and they decide. So they do some at restaurants, and some they like to do at their homes and cater in. We don't pay for alcohol. As much as possible, we just make it a resident-run initiative. No faculty, absolutely.
Yeah, we do the same. We have a recruitment committee run by 3 residents. They have a budget. They go out. They solicit places they think will allow the applicants to get a good feel of Baltimore. And then it's a resident-only event. Very casual. They can bring their significant other if they're in town. And it's, I think our approach is that it's an opportunity for them to sit and talk with the residents in a much less intimidating environment while having food. We pay for food and drink if they're there, but we have a cap at the bar. They know not to go over a certain amount.
Yeah, ours is very similar as well. It is run by residents only. There are no faculty there, and the residents choose a location that they think showcases Chicago a little bit, as well as an opportunity to sit down and talk with the residents. Again, we have a set budget with food and drinks, but a limit to the drinks. And it's a great, I mean, we interview on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, so our event is on Tuesday night to capture both interview applicant days so that we can have the most residents and applicants there as possible.
Yeah, we do the same thing. We always do 2 days in a row and have one evening event. And I'm always sort of curious which of the candidates are, you know, in most advantageous position, if you will, the ones that got the interview over with that day and then can go out and let their hair down, or the ones that have to get up the next morning after having a few glasses of wine with me. But then I've had a few glasses of wine, so the next morning maybe my guard's down and every now and then. It's all about strategy, right? Panel, it's all about strategy. Before we switch gears, I do want to hear in sort of the theme of strategy, each of the panelists, just give me a quick answer about when you think it's the most strategic time to schedule your interview. Christy sort of alluded to folks go on audition interviews, if you will, early on. That will break my heart for those folks who come on the very first interview day now. But is there some advantage to interviewing earlier in the season, later in the season? Let's start with you, Christy.
Again, like I said, we had people match for every single one of our interview days from the first to the last. And I honestly think just fit the best interview schedule for you as an applicant, where you're spending the least amount of money, traveling the least, and that works best for you. In my opinion, I don't think the day you interview matters as much. It certainly doesn't from retrospectively looking at our data at our program.
Linda?
Same. All program directors are a little crazy, right? We also have looked to make sure we do not have a preference based on match, based on day, early, late, and we don't. We match from all days throughout interview season. I agree with Christy. I think you should really go on the day that is most convenient for you. We have all of our own students interview on the first day, so they can use it as a experience building interview. And I think that's a great thing. The students really enjoy it. If you can interview at your own program first, I think that's a really good thing to do, because people are going to be a little more likely to give you feedback about how you're doing than other programs. But I think you just fit it in where you can. And I don't think it really makes a big difference personally.
Well, what about for the candidates creating their own list? So, you know, one of the articles we listed documents this phenomenon that we all seem to be referencing, which is that our list is not impacted by when the student chooses to come. But what about theirs? Is it better to interview in January so things are fresh in your mind, better to interview early on? Any thoughts on that?
No, I agree with the other guys. You're overthinking it if you're trying to juggle when to do it.
How about interviews that are offered to you during your away rotation? Some folks are interviewing at programs that make these arrangements in August and September. I mean, this is 6-7 months before they have to actually create their list.
Well, we require the students who rotate with us to interview at that time. It unclutters our schedule. We don't want anybody to feel they have to fly back to Atlanta if they've already been here. For us, the interview process is very objective, and it really doesn't matter. We accept more residents from the ones who rotated with us, who interviewed early, than we do percentage-wise for the rest of the year. These are the ones who auditioned with us and have a stronger connection to the program. There's certainly no disadvantage to it.
All right, so Dr. Regan, can you just tell us what happens on interview day? Describe a typical interview day. What does it consist of?
Sure. Obviously, you're going to get a little bit of diversity across the board at all the different programs. But I think at minimum, you should expect that you're going to meet the program director. You're going to get an introduction to the program. Sometimes that's more formal and sometimes it's more casual. I think you're always going to get a tour of the site that you would be working in particular the emergency department, but often you'll see other parts of the hospital that you'd be working at. And you should expect to meet residents when you're there. I think if you don't meet residents, or at least a couple residents, that would raise a red flag to me in the setup of the interview day. I think past that, it's variable. I think obviously you're going to interview, and some of those will be individual interviews, and some of them they'll be more structured and less structured than others. But my day, for instance, our interview day is on our conference day. So we actually have all the applicants come to our final hour of conference so they can get an idea of what goes on there. I know that happens in some programs, but not in others. And so you're going to get little tidbits and views into different parts of the program, but it's not always going to be the same. And variable, again, in terms of length of day. Some days are going to be shorter, others are going to be longer. We have a somewhat long day because we do have residents come to have the applicants come to our resident conference. Other days, I know, you know, you're done in 4 hours. So expect to have variety and really look when you're scheduling to see when you start and when you end, so that you know how long you should be planned to be there.
All right, I think that's a really good point. You know, I don't know if students really have a good sense of how to anticipate these things till they're sort of in the midst of them in the season. And, you know, some of these folks that are flying all around the country are going to encounter interviews that start very early in the morning, 7, 8 a.m. with breakfast and presentations. And then they're expected to go to an evening social that night that might go well past a normal dinner time, and then be expected to repeat the next day at another program across town. It's a tough schedule.
Yeah, I think that you should make the most of the time you have there. So you have downtime, and it's not a city you're familiar with, go out and see a little bit about the city. While you're there, you can ask, hey, where should I go? Where do most residents live? And go check out those neighborhoods. If you don't want to have to make a second visit and you have downtime, you could go spend time in the emergency department and see what it's like while you're there in real time. So there's lots of things you could do on days that end early and still have an event planned for you later in the evening. The same thing for if you have a pre-interview night social. You can, before you go to the social, stop by and spend time in the emergency department if you want to shadow, to try to minimize the financial consideration of having to come back for a second look.
And in terms of setting expectations for the students, you know, you mentioned that you will meet the program director. I actually think there are programs out there that you don't meet the program director. I meet everyone that comes through, but that doesn't necessarily mean that all PDs set up their interview day that way.
Yeah, I don't think all programs interview with the program director, but I don't know how I would feel about ranking programs where I don't get to meet the person who's going to be making all the decisions that go on for the next 3 or 4 years. Personally, I think it's really important to understand the personality of your program director for each individual program. I realized I had once an interview when I was an applicant where the PD had an emergency and wasn't there. And obviously, that's not a red flag to me that they couldn't be there. But I do think it's important to hear them and see what their personality is like and get an opportunity to talk to them, even if it's not in a formal interview, because that person is going to be very important to you for the next 3 or 4 years of your career. I'm not sure what other people on the panel think, but
I agree completely with every piece of that.
I agree as well.
With the part about meeting residents, though, I try to set up my day so that I could get as many residents there as well. I think the applicants are there, by and large, to meet the residents and make sure that the fit and the gut feeling are all correct. But it's hard, right? They have to work in various units in the department. 2/3 of our shifts in emergency medicine are nights and evenings, and if you have an evening social, that knocks out 2/3 of your residents being able to go to dinner. So what's a reasonable number of residents to expect to meet? You're not going to meet all 40 or 50 in a program, right?
Yeah, I don't know that there's an actual number. I would suggest you say, if I don't meet 10 residents, you know, this isn't a program for me. I think you want some diversity in who you meet. I think you want to meet some people who are pretty junior and interns and just arriving and seeing how the transition is for them. I think you want to meet people who've been in the program for a couple years to see what it's been like, your senior residents to know what it's like for them going out in the job market. Are they getting the jobs? And what it's really like to be there for more than a couple months like the interns are. I think from a student perspective, you should feel empowered to look and see if there are actually residents in that program who went to your medical school or who know someone you know. Because the more people you can get to talk to you, either it's on the phone or via email or in person, that's really where you're going to get a lot of that information about what it's like to be a resident in that program. And I think that's really, really important. If you met 3 people and you loved them all, I think that's enough. If you met 10 people and you thought, wow, I really didn't like this one person, but the other 9 seemed great and seemed really happy, that's probably fine too. I don't think there's a real set answer. I think more important to me to make sure you meet across the spectrum of PGY year within the program.
Yeah, maybe the takeaways from that is that, you know, you really want to just see that the program makes the residents accessible to you, so should you have questions whenever you're encountered with them, either on interview day or even afterwards. And then to be scientists about it in some way and recognize that you have sampling bias, right? You're going to meet certain people on certain days, and they're going to have bad days or good days, and perhaps that's not entirely reflective of the whole program, and that complicates a little bit about your gut feeling when you're. Let's talk about the actual interviews themselves. What questions should the students expect during their interviews? What questions from faculty versus perhaps the resident interviews or the program director interviews?
Again, going to be variable. I think there are programs across the country that have scripted questions that they require to be asked during the interview, and then they have our programs that very, very relaxed, and it's sort of whatever you want to talk about. I think a good rule of thumb to remember is that if it's in your application, it's fair game, and that if you did any work at all, research presentations, you need to be prepared to discuss that in detail, so that don't put anything on there that you're part of a research team or a project if you really can't discuss it. So I think those are sort of good rules to start. Past that, I think we all ask a lot of the same questions. What are your strengths and weaknesses? Why do you want to come to our program? And although I think geography plays a huge part in why people choose programs, telling me that you want to come to my program because it's in Baltimore is probably not the right answer. I think that could be part of the right answer, but also something about Hopkins that drew you to our program, and not just geography. I think that's really important. Why emergency medicine? I think you're definitely going to be asked. And then past the general questions, I think the questions about you as a person and types of questions such as, what can you bring as an applicant to emergency medicine and to our program in particular? You might get examples such as, tell me the last time you had conflict and how you dealt with it. What types of patients do you feel most challenging in dealing with? I think as people in a program, we're always looking to try to make sure that there's not someone who's going to come in and be a disaster, right? Either have bias, can't handle stress and conflict. And I think a lot of programs ask questions whether or not scenario-based, or whether or not it's, tell me about the last time you were frustrated at work or you really had a challenging encounter. I'd be prepared to discuss all of those things. And those are typical things I think you're going to see coming from the faculty or the program director applicants. I think residents, when they interview, and we do have residents interview, often ask less intimidating type questions, if we can call them intimidating. They, I think, often ask questions about things in the application. Hey, I see you like to hike. Tell me about that. What are your hobbies? Tell me what the last book you read was and why, you know, what do you find interesting to read, or where do you like to travel? Our residents, when they interview, really are focused more on learning about the applicant as a person and figuring out whether or not they would fit in with the rest of the residents. And then really, I think, because they're usually less comfortable with interviews, often use the application as a guide to help try to figure out what types of questions to ask.
Just to open it up to the other panelists, any other common questions that are sort of always asked at your shop? Philip?
No, I think she covered it. We also sort of use a fairly free form, so every person's going to have their own style. You know, the heart of it, we're trying to find out what sort of person they are and what their values are. We're going to keep digging until we figure out, you know, if there's somebody who's going to be happy in our environment.
Chrissy, do you have anything to add?
No, I agree. I mean, I think Linda covered a lot of the standard questions that applicants should be prepared for. And I think Phil's right as well. You're really looking for a fit. I mean, we're looking for people that are going to like thrive and really excel in our environment. And applicants should be looking for a program that's going to help them get to where they want to go. And so oftentimes the questions a lot of times the most fun questions are just, you're probably asked to talk about yourself. And so be prepared to have something to say about yourself, because that's what people are looking for. They want to know who they're getting besides all of your accomplishments.
I think students should anticipate the tell me about yourself statement question over and over and over again throughout the season, and they have to make it sound unrehearsed and fresh every time. But that's certainly going to be very common, and the strengths and weaknesses and how you handle decision-making and conflict. I think those are all good themes. And another theme is that really none of the panelists said that you'll be asked about medical content. I don't think that that's a common question in EM interviews. What about the questions the students should be asking their interviewers? What questions should the students be thinking about ahead of time?
Well, I think it's probably variable based on who they're going to be asking and who they're going to be talking to. So obviously you have three groups of people. You have the residents that they're just going to be socializing with or sitting with, as opposed to the residents who might be interviewing them. I think your general interviewers are going to be in your category of your program director and then everyone else who'd be interviewing them. And I think you probably need to have an approach for all three of those groups of people. I think for the residents, it's an opportunity for you to really ask them questions such as, what do you like best and worst about the program? Do you like the program? What's it like working with the faculty? Are the faculty happy, easy to access? Do they teach well? And in general, are you happy here in the program as a resident? Doing it all again, would you choose to come here? And if not, why, obviously? Hopefully that's not who you're putting in front of the medical students who are coming. But just an idea of what it's like. Tell me about a day, in the emergency department. What's your favorite thing when you come into work? What challenges you the most? Get an idea of the day-to-day stuff. I think for the faculty who you're talking with, you can really ask them anything that you want to know about the program. I think it's an opportunity for you to clarify. And why I say that is you should do some digging before you go. The faculty interview is not the time to say, do you have a pediatric rotation? You should know that before you get there, because you should go on the internet and look at the website and look at the rotations and look at the sites they work at. There might be a mission statement or a philosophy up there that you should know before you get there. And so this is an opportunity for you to clarify, hey, I see you work at such and such hospital for your peds rotation. Why do you go there and not your main site? That's a great question, right? Because it shows you looked, you got information, and you're seeking to clarify. And at that point, for your interviewers, you can ask anything you want to know about. And I think that the role there is really figuring out what that program is going to give you as a trainee. I think for your program director, this is an opportunity for you to get the big picture questions. Clearly, your program director is going to know the answers to all the other questions, but this is where you can ask about the philosophy of the program, the strengths the program director thinks they bring as a program, or as a program director, for that matter, what changes might be happening. I had an applicant who asked me a couple years ago, and I thought it was the most insightful question. He said, what type of resident is successful here? And I thought, wow, that's a great question. And the program director is clearly going to be a good person to answer that, as will many of the faculty. Full questions that you gear towards different people. But clearly, if you get to the PD and no one has answered a question you've had, you can ask it. I'm not saying you can't ask a more detail level question, but I'd say to use that time really for bigger picture ticket items, and to remember that showing interest, and by showing interest, knowing that you've done a little research on my program, goes a long way to making me see you as someone who's interested, who's going to be prepared in general as a resident, and not just someone who comes and expects me to give them spoon feed the information to them. So being prepared, looking at the website, calling and speaking with people ahead of time will go a long way.
I hear from students all the time that, I went into this interview and the interviewer was rushing over from a shift and they didn't have time to read my application. And they asked me all these questions that were already in my application. And I think that we sometimes as faculty feel the exact same thing when an applicant asks us something that's easily accessible on the website that, I feel like we've given them that information already. But I like your style of clarifying something that they read, which, shows that they did their homework. That's great. And I think one of the important comments that Linda made earlier here is that you have to have a question. If you have one interview or six interviews in a day, every one of those interviews is going to end with the interviewer saying, do you have any questions for me? And I think that you really need to always have them. When you get to the end of the day, you're tired, you've been interviewing at a ton of places. To end with no is not the right interview style for any job.
I just say, to remember that we all sit down and talk afterwards. If you're going to ask the same question to three different people, it should be a question that's applicable to everyone, like, what's your favorite part about the program? If I sit down and I hear that the student asked, where do you do your PEDS rotation, to three subsequent faculty, that's a red flag to me that they really weren't prepared and really had nothing to ask. If you're going to ask the same question, be prepared to know that we're going to talk about that later.
Great. Dr. Shane, I want to switch gears now to some of the professionalism issues that are related to interview season. We talked about how to schedule interviews. Perhaps you could speak to how to reschedule them if you need to change your travel schedule. And more importantly, how to cancel interviews in a professional way.
Sure. I think Chrissy said at the beginning, you want to get somewhere between 10 and 14 interviews. That's really the critical mass that you need to get to be sure that you've got the 6 or 7 that you really like on the front of your rank list that you'll get into. So you need to apply to enough programs to be sure that you're getting at least that 10 to 14 interviews. I'm a little bit more conservative than Chrissy about how many programs that my students apply to, because you only have one chance. If you don't get an interview in the first round, it's too late to send out more applications. So I'm a little bit more conservative, and I have applied a little bit more. And so it's quite natural for some of my students to end up with a few more interviews than they can reasonably handle. And we understand that. It's totally fine with me if you cancel your interview with me, because, you know, I'm trying to figure out who's interested in my program, and I got a ton of people who seem really good, and I'd rather winnow through the people who are on the fence. And totally fine if you back off. This is business. Nobody's going to be offended. So just do it right. To me, 2 weeks in advance is the minimum to stay in the level of politeness. I don't know where that came from. I made it up, but it seems about right. Especially with Interview Broker, which we also use, people can put themselves automatically on the wait list and they slide into that position instantly the second you slide out of it. The only thing that will piss us off is if you do it the night before or even the day before. I mean, and the program coordinators all talk to each other. So you can get yourself a reputation on the interview trail just by not handling that elegantly. So don't be afraid to. I mean, don't come and waste my time because you were too afraid to cancel the interview. As long as you do it politely, nobody's going to be upset with you. You guys agree with about 2 weeks?
Yeah, I would say that as soon as you know that you either are unable or have decided not to interview somewhere, to cancel. As soon as you know that, because there's a lot of other people that are on the wait list or the dates don't work out, and then all of a sudden they can slide into that spot. And so that the more notice you give a program, the better it is for the program, the better it is for all the other applicants, and the better it is for you. If you're in that position on someone else's wait list, you'd want that to be reciprocated. Yeah, I agree. As soon as you know, and we don't mind. We understand that's how things go. But I agree with Philip. The night before or the morning of, especially if you do it more than once, can quickly get around the country, and you really don't want that reputation.
Any comments to add, Linda?
I mean, I agree. I think there's nothing worse than being stuck on the morning of with an open spot that you have 30 people that you could have filled it with. I think I always find it really disappointing. Obviously, extreme situations aside, we're not talking about you're snowed in, you had a car accident or something like that. We're talking about you just didn't show up and sent an email after interview day started saying, oops, not coming. I think we've all had that happen. It just really doesn't feel very good because you're looking at the group as a whole, and there are so many people you could use to put into that spot. It's really not the right thing for the applicant group as a whole.
Yeah, a no-show is entirely unprofessional and reflects not only poorly on you, but poorly on your whole school and on what you're known for on the trail. I think the 2 weeks, Philip, is exactly what I advise my students. You know, simply as a courtesy to the program to be able to find an applicant who would then be able to buy a ticket with a 2 week notice so they could have a reasonable cost to this flight that they're adding, you know, at the last minute. I think that that's all common courtesy. You did say something interesting, though, that I want to follow up on. You said the first round of interviews. What do you mean by interview offers? What do you mean by that? So you said students have to have enough applications out there because there's not going to be a second round.
I mean, today, every application comes in within a day or two of September 15th. And if you send out your applications and you realize that you're not getting enough interviews and you try and send out some more applications 2-3 weeks later, a month later, it's too late. And certainly October, we're not looking at the new applications. They're going almost instantly and automatically into our no thank you pile. There's people who get panic and send out more applications really don't get more interviews.
Yeah, and that's the reason we put the reference out of Oregon on the list of references about the early invitation. You know, there used to be this kind of fake deadline, if you will, of when the dean's letter was released on November 1st. And now that it's moved up to October 1st, there really isn't a lot of time between September 15th when it goes live and October 1st for that early invitation. And I think most of us kind of do one round of invitations in early October, and there's not a lot of spots left. To share secrets and explain the process so it's not mystified for the students, you know, we have a day where all of our faculty get together and we call it file review day, and we've all read a certain number of files, and we have this marathon day where at the end of the day we have our list of folks we're going to interview, and at the end of the day we click a button, everybody gets invited, and use the broker. The next day all the spots are gone. It just sort of happens overnight magic. But then there's not a lot of other movement on the list throughout. I agree, there's really only one round, and it kind of separates the students, Phil, into two groups, right? There's the group that applied to 30 places, because that's what we told them to do on another hangout. And then they gathered far more than 15 offers, and they have to politely decline some of them or cancel some of them that they'd already scheduled. But then there's this other group of students who really just didn't get enough interviews. So let's talk about the professionalism around a student perhaps who's only got 4 or 5 interviews. What do they do? And particularly for the programs that aren't necessarily rejecting them, right? They're not getting a letter telling them that they're not invited. They're just sort of in this wait list limbo land. What happens to that?
Yeah, I mean, that's tough. I mean, hopefully your mentor or your program director has sort of guided you and let you know if you need a plan B and if you should have applied somewhere else. And that's a good time to go and back and talk to. And you should have somebody who's at your home institution advising you who really knows this. It's okay to send polite follow-up inquiries, especially if you've got some connection to a program that may not be obvious. I'm fine if I get an email saying, I'm particularly interested in Atlanta because I've worked at the CDC, or I'm particularly interested in Emory because I was there as an undergraduate. And it's possible that I just missed that when we're going through it. And we're happy to take a second look at people who are waiting. Other than that, I don't know that there's much you can do. We all have the same numbers issue. And in general, it's good news if you haven't been rejected, because out of courtesy, we try and let people know pretty quickly if we're not going to be able to interview them. So as long as you haven't heard, I think there's still hope.
Hey, Philip, so if it's okay, I'm going to send you all of our students who are interested in Ebola research, because I feel like that is really the hub of where they should train. That's all right.
As long as they look good in a Tri-Vair isolation suit.
Done.
One more professionalism question about all this, Philip. The illegal and the inappropriate questions. What are those, and when asked, how should a student respond to them?
Well, so there's really two categories. There are the ones that are legally illegal, and then the ones that are match inappropriate. And first of all, most of the time when I hear about these things happening, it's a resident interviewer or a junior faculty interviewer was just being enthusiastic and didn't really know the rules. And I wouldn't get upset or make a big deal out of it if it's somebody who was just being good-natured and following a conversation and maybe strayed a bit too far. You can just steer the conversation back. Don't ever feel that you need to divulge anything you don't want to. And, you know, at the end you say, I'm uncomfortable. Any modern interviewer will know if you say you're uncomfortable, they've stretched the line. Things that are illegal are anything to do with sex, age, disabilities, family planning status, military discharge, evictions, things like that. Pretty unlikely, other than sometimes it's women get the are you going to get pregnant type of inference question, which is just wildly inappropriate. You should just say absolutely not. Because if they went there, I would just, whatever your feelings are about it, you should just, you know, say play along and give them the answer that they want. For the record, when you come interview at my program, you'll see a changing table in the bathroom, because we're all about that. So we like to send those subtle messages to our applicants that these things are okay. And then there's the match questions. Nobody is allowed to ask you how you're going to rank them. They're allowed to express interest in you. We would love to have you. And you're allowed to say, I would love to be here. They're not allowed to say, where are you going to match us, or we're going to match you number one. Anything that's a promise. And you're not supposed to say the same too. Again, the professionals, the program directors should know that. And it's problematic if you're getting pressure from them. I would just say, you're my number one choice. That may be a little dishonest, but they're the ones who broke the rules. I would just play along with that. I don't really know how else to advise somebody, because clearly then you've got somebody who's either inappropriate or immature, and I wouldn't want that to hurt your chances.
Yeah, so that's a great commercial for our next hangout that we'll be taping, is sort of how to professionally navigate the time period between your last interview and when you make your rank list, and sort of all those declarations of love, if you will, to each other, program to applicant, and vice versa. But you did say an interesting word that I want to get the other panelists' thoughts on. You said sometimes women are asked questions about family planning. I'd like to hear from the women on the panel. Is it sometimes or frequently?
Oh, we never ask.
Right, but
you know, I think
when I chat with other faculty members, they'll say, "Well, I never asked, but I was asked pretty much everywhere I went." I mean, was that a common experience? And, you know, how did you handle it?
I think when I interviewed for residency a number of years ago, I think I was interviewed. I was asked 3 times that I can recall. And my reply was simply, I'm not planning on having children anytime in the near future, because I thought that was the right answer. And it was sort of true at the time, but it was highly inappropriate for anyone to ask. You know what they're looking for is for you to say you're not having children, because no one wants to say, oh, now I have to have someone out on maternity leave for, you know, 3 months. So that's why they're asking, right? They want to know how much of a liability you are for a staff member. But I was asked, I think, 3 that I can recall off the top of my head right now.
Well, you know, so I think there's an article that we listed that has the frequency of it. Gene Hearn did a great job sort of capturing that in a study a year ago. And it's fairly frequent. So sampling size of 3 out of 10 that you had to deal with, that's 10 interviews, that would be a lot. But I think the word intention is really important, right? So if you get the sense that the interviewer is asking because he or she wants to hear that you're not going to get pregnant, well, that's terribly insulting and off-putting and would be horribly reflective of the program. But, you know, sometimes that question gets asked with actually really good intention, right? So if the resident interviewer has kids and they use the daycare at the hospital and wants to talk about that and broaches this illegal topic, but has a really good intention. Sometimes I think the applicant needs to kind of feel that out.
But I don't think the applicant should have to feel out. I think it should be clear from the initial conversation, which is, I'm not sure if you're planning on having kids or not, but just in case you are, we have great daycare facilities here. There are great public schools in the area. I tell all the students who come in, we talk about, you know, the public school system in Baltimore and how great it actually is and great places to live. We say, if you have kids, to the whole group, these are the residents in the program that have children in case you're interested in talking with them. But we never would specifically ask someone because I think the perception is 9 times out of 10 going to go in the negative way than in the, oh, they're asking me because they want to tell me something good. So I think that there are ways to give that information without actually asking any questions at all.
Chrissy, what was your experience, if you don't mind me?
I agree with Linda. I think I was asked a handful of times. And again, I think the natural reaction is that you take it in a negative way. And my answer was, I'm not planning on having children anytime soon, but that was actually my honest answer. But it's a little off-putting when you're asked that question. And I agree with Linda that there is a way that you can let all of the applicants know as program leadership about all the resources you have and that you are a program that really supports family without asking direct questions. And I think that I see your point as well, Mike, that there are maybe honest mistakes that are made by, you know, residents or junior interviewees. But I think that's where it's important ahead of time to actually have a conversation with the people that are working with you on your interview days to understand what they can and can't talk about or shouldn't talk about, and then how you can frame things in a different way that does not put applicants in an uncomfortable position.
I don't disagree with any of the comments the three made. I think it's just sort of an interesting approach issue. Michelle, let's stop there and sort of get your sage wisdom as to what we've said along the way here. What thoughts do you have about the topics we've covered so far?
Well, thanks. I'm happy to share any sort of sage wisdom I might have, but we've kind of jumped a little bit from some of the tangible numbers of how many do you interview, and then really more the stylistic approach of the actual interview day, some do's and don'ts, and so questions might come up. You know, I love numbers and I feel like it's kind of comforting for students, and I just want to try to allay their fears a little bit, because I feel like with each iteration of these videos, I feel like the stress level is just getting more and more kind of stifling. I actually have this great document I wanted to share with you for just a second here. It's from 2011 NRMP. There's nothing more recent, but it's basically called probability of matching the preferred specialty by number of contiguous ranks. And so the bottom, the whole x-axis is, this is basically how many programs you list in contiguous order in one specialty, meaning that's why it's contiguous ranks. And on the y-axis is the probability of matching in that program. And you can see here, I don't know if you can see my mouse at all, but US Seniors is this top curve. And then beyond about 10 programs on your list, it has diminishing returns. And just be aware that this is a population graph. So obviously you're going to need a tailor based on how good, how competitive you are overall. But something to take away, you still have a really great chance of matching. And so Philip mentioned more like 10 to 4. I think Chrissy mentioned 10 to 14. And that's kind of why that number came about, was because of this graph. I put this link on the website. You're welcome to take a look at it. You can do it. 5 of us matched, you could match.
All right, so we're going to close our discussion with quick pearls and pitfalls from each of the panelists. Chrissy, what would be some of your do's and don'ts for interview season?
Okay, so do's and don'ts for interview season. Let's start with the don'ts. Don't cancel the day of or the night before. Okay. That's a big pet peeve. Don't do anything you wouldn't do in any normal business or professional setting. And some of the do's, I think, be optimistic, be yourself, be real. I think most people that are going to emergency medicine are fantastic. We have a really hard time differentiating our rank list because there's so many amazing candidates out there. So come in with confidence and be yourself and really engage with the program, because you never know what you're going to find each day that you enter a new interview.
Linda, pearls and pitfalls.
I mean, I agree with Chrissy very much. I think don't assume that anyone you meet isn't going to say anything about you to the program leadership if you offend them. The program coordinator, we had a couple years ago a research staff who had a bad interaction with an applicant in the hallway. And the research staff like came into our post-debrief meeting and was just like, this person's a disaster. And it was just a random encounter that really was a huge red flag to us. So everyone that you meet on that day, you should assume, so do assume everyone will have input in how you will fall on that rank list. My biggest do is have some energy. I realize it's exhausting as the interview trail goes on, but be interested, be invested in getting information while you're there. It's your only opportunity to do it. So really bring your energy, be yourself, and try to relax, because we just want to get to know you as a person and find out whether or not we're a good fit for each other. So be yourself.
Hello. Do's and don'ts.
Yeah, so first of all, be on time. We are a profession of shift workers and we see the clock. Don't lie. Like, I mean, when people feel that their answer is inadequate and they start amplifying on it, and I can be half asleep, not paying attention, and somebody lies and I wake up. The professional interviewer knows that. Don't ever lie. Be prepared. It's really obvious who hasn't read our website, and why would you fly somewhere, put yourself up, and then not even bother to spend 10 minutes reading it? Be positive. You're not scoring points with me by telling me how horrible Northwestern University of Chicago is. Tell me how good I am. And I really don't like, certainly don't tell me you want to go into emergency medicine because you didn't like surgery and you didn't like a medicine. You always take the positive spin on why you want to do it. And finally, I'd say, be ready to lead the interview. There's nothing more deadly than a blank space and an interviewer who's tired and doesn't have anything else to ask. So have some questions ready. Be ready to lead. And you should have your own message going in, what it is that you want to tell them about yourself. So just be aggressive about it.
All right, great. I'm glad that you mentioned that don't talk trash about each other's programs. I'm glad that came up in this discussion. There's nothing more distasteful than to hear folks just talking nonsense about where they were the day before, as if that's going to endear you to the program director. We're all friends, and we hang out together on Google, and that's not Michelle, final thoughts on the topic.
On the topic of interview day, I think there's just so many great pearls that came across. I do want to add a plus one sage advice, as it were, which is, you're going to be at your seventh interview day, and you're going to just all of a sudden pop open your eyes and go, where am I? Because it's all kind of a blur, is to take really copious notes about who you were with, who you interviewed with, what you talked about, what are the pros and cons, your gestalt feelings. You can totally nerd out, because I can imagine Mike had this like 3D color-coded highlighting system, but I don't think you need to go that crazy, but I would take some good notes because they are going to start to blur a little bit as you stack all these interviews back to back.
Can I just add to that in your multi-color-coded Excel spreadsheet that you will have, don't just write down peds rotations, who does the airway. Write down, have a column for gut feeling. Because if your gut feeling was bad, you should listen to that gut feeling, because they could be the best program on the website or on paper, but if they're not the right program for you, that's not going to be a match made where you want it to be made. And if your gut feeling was, I really feel like I fit in here, then that you should really listen to that, because every program is going to make you a good emergency physician. It's all the other stuff that's coming out of the program that really is, I think, the most important. And if you have a good relationship with the people there, and you're going to thrive. So have a column for gut feeling.
I'm going to close there, kind of switch to what's really become one of my favorite parts of these hangouts, the opportunity for the PDs to tell us something interesting about their program. I am very grateful to all three of you for participating today, so this is your opportunity to have a little free commercial, if you will. So we're going to start with Dr. Babcock. Chrissy, I'm all of about 10 miles away from you right now, so you're going to really have to work to tell me something I don't know about the University of Chicago.
Okay, Mike, you're putting a lot of pressure on. Okay, so the University of Chicago, we're one of the oldest programs in the country. We've been around for over 30 years, and so with that, we have a very large alumni network, so it's wonderful for placing graduates in jobs because we have people all over the country. We're also a really diverse residency program, which is probably the thing that I'm most proud of. We recruit nationally from all over the country with people of various backgrounds, interests, like goals with their lives, and I think that makes us it's a really robust, interesting place to train. In addition, we're it's a professional family, which I know a lot of programs are, but that's something I'm also very proud of. If you spend 3 years with us, it's basically a lifelong professional network. That's what I got for you, Mike.
Yeah, well, students, UofC is an old and storied program with some of the greatest leaders of EM having worked and trained there, and now being run by some awesome people that I call my best conference buddies, if you will, including Dr. Babcock, who I think is running a great program down there. And to the point of don't trash talk other programs, UofC and Northwestern are buddies and do conferences together every year and really get along well. So this is a great example of Crosstown is not rivals. And I definitely think you guys should check out U of C. Dr. Regan, tell us about Hopkins.
Hopkins is, well, I think it's a great program. We've also been around a long time. We're actually celebrating our 30th graduating class this next coming year. So we've been around for quite a while. I think the biggest thing that people know about our program or reasons they choose to come and interview our program is we're a four-year program, but we have a slightly different approach to our fourth year. We're really a 3+1 program. So we do all of our primary clinical emergency medicine training in the first 3 years. And then our fourth year, you do a little embedded mini fellowship in one of our 12 track. You know, I'm proud of lots of things about the program. I'm proud we have a diverse group of people here. I'm proud we have diverse faculty, but I'm really proud of the various experiences that we're really giving the residents in that fourth year, from critical care time to international time to EMS time to medical education times. That's really, I think, the thing that I'm the most proud of at the moment, and really the most fun, is to really launch people into academics and learning what niche is really going to be their thing. That's a go Hopkins. Yay.
Well, you know, so students, I have been getting to know Linda better and better in the last year or two with some different projects. And she is so smart as a whip that it's certainly intimidating to me most every time I talk to her. So that must mean she runs a tight ship and a great program. And certainly in the preparation for academics, there's Dr. Regan's among the best of the PDs who gets the vision of, and philosophy around that. So definitely check out the Johns Hopkins University. And then, Philip, we know about the Ebola thing, so pick something else. Tell us something you don't know about Emory University.
That was my thing.
We all watch CNN, which is also from Atlanta, Philip. Tell us something I don't know.
Well, I mean, you guys all have great programs, and Mike knows I send my parents to him frequently enough in Chicago. We are the trauma center, and we're the only safety net hospital in a metropolitan area of 5.5 million people. And we're very proud of our social mission and the unique role that we have here in a city that's really amazingly beautiful to live in.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to use a sports reference to describe the deep bench that your faculty has. So, you know, if I advise 20 or 25 Northwestern students in a year and each comes to me saying they're interested in some different aspect of the practice of medicine, and they say, well, where can I go do that? I say, oh, go to Emory, because they have a faculty member who does. You guys have so many faculty, such great varied interests, and There's somebody who's doing that thing that you're interested in at Emory. So definitely check that program out. Thanks to our panel. Dr. Lynn, any final thoughts on our panel today, our topic?
No, I just, for the sake of brevity and time, let's just wrap this up. But I just want to point you toward my banner again. Enough is said.
Thanks, everybody. Look for our next hangout in the series soon.
Bye, guys.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Emergency Medicine Match Advice. You can view any of our episodes for free on Allium's YouTube channel, or if you prefer, listen to the episodes as Allium podcasts on SoundCloud. Also, check out summaries of our episodes as blog posts on Allium.com and in the publication A User's Guide to the Allium EM Match Advice series in the June 2017 issue of the Western Journal of Emergency Medicine. We love to hear from our listeners. Post your questions or comments for any of our episodes on Allium.com. Thanks for joining us.